Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I'll tell you what, we've had a great few days, but it's been such a busy lineup here on Montana Talks over the last few days. You know, we were live from Plentywood on Friday, live from Lodgegrass on Monday, and then, of course, we had some great guests join us on the show yesterday. So it's like, man, we gotta free up some phone lines. We gotta have some open phones time here on Montana Talks. So, as promised, we are going to do that today here with Wednesday's Montana Talks. We've got the phone lines open for you, 406-294-0970. Or you can message us on our Montana Talks app if you've got something you want to talk about. Anyway, earlier this morning, though, I got to include a little bit of this as we take your phone calls. We'll mix some of this news into it as well here. You guys have all seen the news about this devastating bridge collapse in Maryland. And, you know, after this cargo ship, this gigantic container ship ran right into the bridge, took the bridge down. Several lives are believed to have been lost in it now as a result, but it could have been a lot worse had that Mayday call not gone out and had law enforcement not done their best work possible to clear that bridge in the middle of the night back in Baltimore. But anyway, one of our listeners, a friend of mine, Greg Franks, who we've had on the show before, he said, "Hey, you got to chat with my friend Kirk Ryder." He got an appointment to the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy back in the mid-'80s. He's a Billings senior high grad, so he's a Billings, Montana native, came back to Billings back in the mid-'90s as well. But basically, he has had a career in the military. He worked in the U.S. Army Transportation Corps, commanded various logistics operations, including waterborne and overland units serving during Desert Storm. And then in the early 90s, he became a for-hire claims investigator, known in the industry as a marine surveyor, working throughout the Far East based out of Hong Kong. So he's investigated and done a whole bunch of investigations when it comes to ship collisions, fires, and other ocean-going ship catastrophes. And then in the late 90s, he returned to the maritime industry and has been working as a marine technical director for several large U.S. marine insurers. Anyway, I caught up with him earlier this morning, and it was such an interesting conversation. I want to share that here in this statewide show. Just share just a little bit of that with you here on the program, because I was chatting with one of our other friends, and I was like, holy cow, that was very interesting talking with Kirk Ryder. To me, that was better than any guest you might even be hearing on the national news right now when it comes to this the bridge collapse in Maryland and looking at it from an, you know, expert analysis viewpoint. You know, there's lots of wannabe experts on Twitter and Facebook and elsewhere, but this guy actually is an expert. So I'll share a little bit about what we talked about, including the question, was this deliberate? Was this intentional? Could there have been a cyber attack? Because I know a lot of people have concerns on that front. So I'll share a little bit of that conversation with you, but we'll start with your phone calls, 406-294-0970. Back with Open Phones Montana Talks right after this.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Bear Tooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, well, we'll jump right into your phone calls and right into your messages here on Montana Talks. Open phones here on this Wednesday program. Okotoks in Laurel sent us a message on our Montana Talks app. You may have already beaten this subject to death. Actually, we haven't. I think we talked about this probably over a year or so ago, so we should talk about it again. But anyway, you may have already beaten this subject to death. I'm hearing a lot of advertising pushing this. What is the Montana Headwaters Legacy Act? I can't believe there is anything good in it for Montana if Tester is the sponsor. Okotoks and Laurel, you've got good intuition there. You've got good instincts because basically this this American Rivers, whoever's pushing this deal, radical environmental groups that want to lock you out from accessing your so-called public lands. It's radical environmental groups that are pushing this. They make it sound like it's, oh, yeah, we love rivers. We just want to love rivers. No, they're trying to lock you out from getting access. And so that's really what this is all about. But they always put it in some nice, fancy packaging, don't they? I think it was Carrie White from Citizens for Balanced Use who joined us a while back talking about that whole deal. So we'll have to revisit that one. Thanks for the message. Into the phone lines we go. We've got Walter in Billings first up. Walter, what's on your mind this morning?
Hi there. You know, I'm a member of the Jewish congregation, and seeing John Tester send all his money to the Ayatollah in Iran is absolutely disgusting. It's horrendous, and it's downright offensive. I'm scared that the Ayatollah has rapidly said, death to America.
Careful with the language. We do have FCC rules here, but you could say you're scared Adam Schiff lists if you want there instead. But no, I get where you're coming from. Yeah, I mean, when John Tester supported giving all this money to Iran, he basically freed up billions of dollars to go to America's enemies, to go to enemies of the Jewish people, enemies of Israel, all of us.
Yeah, it's scary.
Well, and, you know, yesterday we talked a little bit about oil and gas policy, and it's like, okay, so instead of turning to Williston, North Dakota, Sydney, Montana, instead of turning to Midland, they went to Moscow, they went to Tehran, they went to Caracas for oil instead of to us for more oil, funding our enemies. Do you go to the Chabad synagogue in Billings, Walter?
Oh yeah.
I met up there
Saturdays and stuff. I'm the guy that passes out the yarmulkes.
Very cool. I met the new rabbi there, and what a nice guy. Gotten a chance to meet him on a couple of occasions, and then of course we know our good friend Rabbi Chaim over in Bozeman as well. Walter, thanks for calling in. God bless you. Appreciate the phone call. 294-0970. Next up, we got a caller from Eastern Montana. Goes by the name on Twitter, Tester will not be elected. Good to hear from you, and I've been enjoying seeing your tweets as well.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I always want to give a shout-out to our brave men and women in uniform and all of our veterans. We wouldn't be here without you, so thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yes, so today, I guess, in the land of Tester will not be reelected, I just wanted to follow up what Stephen said. Stephen Miller, he is such a hero to patriots, and he is absolutely correct about everything he said. You know, you could pull up any media online and just do a Google search, and all you're going to get is positive media for Senator Tester and what he's done. And I've been at this for over a year, trying to break through to the truth and trying to peel back the layers of the onion. And the media does not help me at all, because all they do is just support Senator Tester. There's all kinds of, just right now, articles online that are talking about how he is helping the military get more funding and all these things that Montana, of course, feels pride in. We want those things, right? But the reality of it is that he sits on he's a subcommittee for Homeland Security. Use your common sense, Montana. If he cared about Homeland Security, he would not allow an invasion to continue. So I know Montana is smart. I know we're wise. We are the last conservative front. And I just ask the listeners to please investigate a little bit further into Senator Tester before you think that you would like to support him. He is undermining the foundations of our country.
Open borders. And then he voted to allow men in girls' locker rooms. Stephen Miller, you pointed out, he said this: how many dirt farmers do you know that think men in dresses should compete in our girls' sports leagues and undress in their locker rooms?
It's terrible, and he's relying on Montana to just look to our you know, local medias and things like that. But in order to really know what's going on with Senator Tester, you have to start with his committee appropriation, the things that he sits on, the committees in the U.S. Senate, what he sits on. And if you just keep looking backwards, following the money, it is very simple. If I can do it, look.
Everybody else can do it. Spread the word. No, that's right. That's right. Yeah, we got to hold it there. We got to hit the hard break here and back to more callers right after this. Thanks for the call. 294.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Phone lines are open for you here on Wednesday's show, 406-294-0970. Let's jump right back into the phone lines. We've got Don in Columbia Falls listening to KJJR. Hey, Don, what's on your mind this morning?
Say, Aaron, I'm just looking for an answer, I guess, concerning the tragic bridge collapse. How is it that somebody was precisely positioned to film the whole totality of that tragic bridge collapse? How is it? I just don't understand that. I mean, if someone's got an answer out there, I'm looking for it.
Yeah, good question, because there's kind of at least two or three different angles, right, from both sides of the bridge, maybe even a little higher up, showing there's video footage of this, you know, container ship, you know, losing power. You see the lights flicker, and then you see it veer towards what would you call it, the pylon, holding the bridge up, and then you see the whole bridge collapse. And so it's suspicious to you that we have such good video available. Is that what you're saying, basically?
Absolutely. To catch the whole totality of that, I find that rather interesting.
Yeah.
And I thank you, and you can take my answer off the air if you want.
Oh, perfect. Okay, sounds good. Yeah, I mean, I guess my initial reaction is I get where folks are coming from with that question in particular, because it leads people to think that somebody was surveilling this, that somebody was, you know, conducting an attack, and they wanted really good video of the attack that they were – we saw this all the time. I mean, I've found videos of – for example, IED attacks on my patrol, and then you'd see the video surface of IED attacks that hit us. You would see those videos online later on, so the terrorists would want to film their exploits, right? Although this bridge is such kind of an iconic bridge, such an important key bridge and key route in Baltimore, and anymore, so many people have video cameras. I mean, not just on their doorbells and on their businesses. I mean, we've got road cameras. So anymore, there's just cameras everywhere. So I think that's the likely explanation for why we do have such video footage available following this crash. What about the crash, though? I don't know if you guys saw it. Lara Logan, the former 60 Minutes reporter on Twitter, on X, she basically said that, you know, she's got sources telling her that this was a deliberate attack, even though, you know, all the official accounts right now, they're saying, no, this doesn't appear to be deliberate. They don't have any indication that this was a deliberate attack or a cyber attack that deliberately steered that ship into the bridge. It when you watch the video, for us laymen out there, it certainly raises those questions, right? So I was talking with Kirk Ryder. He's a Billings, Montana native. And Kirk, like I mentioned earlier, he's got a career in the maritime industry. And he was telling me that, you know, he's seen some pretty crazy things, especially over in the Far East. He said he's seen some things that would blow your mind. And he says, you know, this catastrophe in Baltimore was certainly traumatic. But he says in other parts of the world, now, these are not unusual circumstances in other parts of the world. It's just something that we don't see too much of here in the United States. So I asked him, based off of everything you've seen, everything you've read, everything you've heard, what's your take on this bridge collapse in Maryland? Here's a little bit about what he had to say.
like a number of things when accidents happen. There's a lot of events and sequences that lead up to, you know, the actual catastrophe. And this has all those earmarks. I think it's a very remote possibility that this could be a terrorist act. I know a lot of people look at that video and see some slight movements there at the end, but it's very hard to judge in the dark that you see there. I was sharing with Aaron on the break kind of an analogy to those of you that haven't seen or been around these large container vessels, that if you imagine maybe like a single person kayak that, you know, a sit on top fishing kayak that you use, and you take that rudder off it that's about the size of your hand extended and replace it with a playing card. That's about the size in kind of ratio of the rudder that's on the ship. So it's not very capable at low speeds. And especially based on the reports that I've read, the power actually went off well before they came close to the bridge. So they'd actually lost steerage much before the video shows. And once that propeller stops moving, there's really the rudder, no matter how big it is completely ineffective at those low speeds. So I think that, you know, people can be confident that it wasn't a terrorist accident, but there are certainly a lot of things that need to be learned in how we protect our infrastructure in the United States. I mean, this loss is going to be catastrophic to our economy, as well as the marine industry or marine insurance industry in particular. I mean, there are estimates that this is going to be as costly as the Costa Concordia that rolled over and sank over in Italy. The other part of this that's pretty profound is that this will shut down the port of Baltimore, which is the 17th busiest port in the United States. Thank goodness it wasn't one of our more busy ports, because it would have even a higher impact. But basically 90% of this port is shut down for a very extended period of time because of this accident.
Yeah, because they're going to have to even, and then, of course, the bridge impacts and the shipment of hazardous materials along that I-95 corridor, the bridge itself. But at least if they can get the remnants of the bridge out of the way, they can resume port operations, is my assumption. But so when a lot of people watch this video, I can see why a lot of people are like, wait a minute, this looks very suspicious, especially to us, because, you know, we don't have the merchant marine background, the maritime industry background that you have. But when we see it, okay, we see the power flicker off, we see the lights flicker off. And then we see, I saw a splash in the video, and then you see the ship look like it veers right at, what would you call it, the pylon underneath the bridge, you know. And so you look at that, and I can see why people think, hey, this looks like it could have been a cyber attack, where somebody remotely could have cyber attacked that vessel, turned the power off, and then veered it straight at the point of that bridge where they wanted to take it down. But you were kind of describing in a way that, okay, they lose power. It seems like, from your perspective, they followed their standard operating procedure. The splash that I saw was the anchor dropping down, because they were trying to slow down after losing power. They wanted to drop anchor fast. And then just, like you say, you lose that rudder, and then that's why even a massive cargo ship would veer the way it veered.
Yeah, you know, and this is all speculation, but based on the reports I've read online from the Pilots Association, there was a debrief they had yesterday, and I couldn't really tell from the reports when the anchors were actually dropped. That's kind of standard procedure when you have a vessel of this size kind of coming up on a possible collision. But unfortunately, because of the depth of the water and the length of the anchor chain, it probably didn't have enough time to really take hold and slow the vessel down, obviously enough. But it is very possible that splash you see is anchor. I kind of have another theory. I did some research online with some of the tools I have with our company that give me satellite images. I thought it was very interesting that this particular bridge, built in the 1970s, in fact, opened in 76, didn't have very much fendering around these structures that support the bridge. If people go online and start looking at some of the bridges in New York City, some of the larger bridges there, they're protected by a large kind of fence around these critical elements of the bridges that we call fenders. And this particular bridge, while it had a concrete section down there, it was actually built into the structure of the bridge. And I think that's eventually going to be found to be a contributing factor, because the bridge or the vessel is actually able to strike the major or principal components of the bridge, as opposed to maybe being slowed or pushed off by a fender system that you see in
All right, so yeah, that was Kirk Ryder, Billings, Montana native, like I say, with a career in the industry. He gave some more fascinating insight I'll get to here in a few minutes. And he also gave a great visual with the size of this cargo ship and just how big it is. And he put a good Montana analogy along with it. So I'll share that here in a few minutes for you as well. But first, let's go back into the phone lines. Looks like we lost Sean in Libby. Perry in Columbus. Perry, stand by. We'll get to you here shortly. First, though, I mentioned that it was our friend Greg Franks who connected us with Kirk. And Greg, thanks. Man, he was just fascinating to chat with this morning.
Yeah, Kirk has a wide experience of decades and decades of investigating this type of thing, and that's why I reached out to him yesterday after seeing this on the news yesterday. And what really triggered my thoughts on this, and I love a good conspiracy theory, you know that, and I like looking at different angles on things. What triggered my thoughts on this was how on earth, less than 6 hours after this accident, did the Biden administration automatically rule out espionage, cyber attacks, or terrorism without any consideration or any due diligence in an investigation. So that's one of the reasons why I reached out to Kirk, and Kirk gives a very compelling discussion as to why this is plausible. But that still doesn't answer the questions of how this administration is able to come out so quickly to identify it. And it triggered my radar as far as similar to what Benghazi's response was with that video that they said caused all that. So
yeah.
either it's really poor handling by this administration, or, you know, the chatters I read online, a lot of these people are thinking this could be a retaliation towards the shooting in Moscow or the Nord Stream pipeline. So, you know, I think those things need to be explored and need to be looked at instead of just coming right out and saying, oh, it's just an accident, it was a fuel issue that caused the problems. There's no way possible within this amount of time period that they can conclusively have that amount of information collected already.
Well, exactly. Yeah, and that's why, like, it's our job as, you know, it's our job as American people to question our government, to question these sorts of things. It's journalists' job out there, these so-called journalists. It's their job to question things and to raise questions. And so, yeah, the fact that they came out so quickly and said, oh, no, just an accident. No. It's like, you haven't even finished it. You haven't even started an investigation yet. How can you sit here and say what the results of it are?
The mainstream media went hook, line, and sinker along with this narrative without any asking any questions either. So as critically thinking Americans that look at these things analytically, I mean, they're only feeding into these potentials for conspiracy theories without doing a full investigation and looking into it.
And they never want you to question it. And then they criticize you if you do raise any questions. Greg, hold that thought. Got to hit our hard break here. And then I'll chat with you more off air. And then we got some more callers after this as well.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
This Thursday, USDA will release its annual March planting survey, and pre-report analysts are expecting USDA to announce 92 million acres of corn plantings, down from 94.6 million last year. As for all wheat plantings, analysts are expecting to see 47.7 million acres planted across the countryside this year. That's down from 49.6 million acres in 2023.
Are you concerned about the impact government policies could have on your cattle business? One way to make your voice heard in Washington is by joining NCBA. When you join, you'll be part of the nation's oldest and largest national cattle industry organization that has a professional team working in Washington, D.C. on issues that matter to cattle producing families nationwide. Don't stay on the sidelines. Make your voice heard by joining NCBA today at the website ncba.org.
This Thursday, USDA will also release its March 1st grain stocks report, and for wheat, pre-report expectations are for USDA to find 1.053 billion bushels of wheat on hand as of March 1st. That's up 12% from a year ago and the highest March total in 3 years. As Russia continues to dominate the world wheat market with low prices, wheat prices here in the U.S. continue to be pressured by the lowest export demand in more than 50 years. I'm Lane Nordlund.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Perry in Columbus, I checked in with him during the break. He called in first, but he is okay waiting for one more caller because we've got a caller that wants to jump in on this ship story, the cargo ship story. And so since we were already on that topic, it just makes sense to go to a caller on that topic first. And then Perry's going to switch tracks to another topic here in Columbus in just a second. Glenn in Kalispell, were you able to stick with us through the break there?
Yes, Aaron, I was. Shout out to everybody in the Flathead. There's a couple of points I wanted to make about the collision. First of all, if you can go online and there's a boat tracking program and application where you can watch this ship as she came down the channel, and she was in her lane, but she was cruising, in my opinion, way too fast. She was at about 8.5 knots, and for a ship that huge, that's an awful lot of speed. And you can see that as the boat lost her power, the forward momentum will take her off track pretty easy. But I would discount at this point any terrorist inclinations until something is proven otherwise. With regard to the Biden administration, and I'm no fan of Sleepy Joe coming out early and saying it wasn't a terrorist attack. That's just their way of trying to keep people from panicking, I think. It's just you know, something that they would have to do automatically.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them cautioning people, say, hey, folks, don't jump to conclusions here, but also not ruling anything out. But, I understand that sense of, hey, we don't want to cause people to freak out. But this is because this is going to have such a massive economic impact, and especially to that port operations back there on the East Coast.
Right. The last thing was somebody raised the question about the cameras, and most ports around the country have got cameras like that. That camera was a camera that's been there for a long time, watching traffic go up and down the channel there. So there was no. There wasn't anybody standing there with a cell phone on the bank watching the ship hit the bridge. It was a city or a county or a state run camera system.
Yeah, and there's cameras everywhere anymore, right? Yeah, I mean, heck, even in the Flathead, there's cameras everywhere, let alone back in a busy city like Baltimore on a major port route, et cetera. All right, hey, well, great. Glenn, thanks for calling in. Great to hear from you. Steve in Anaconda sent me an email as well, says apparently there's cameras on the historic Fort Carroll Island, which is just east of the bridge, according to Steve in Anaconda. So, Steve, thanks for that email. All right. Perry in Columbus, man. I'll tell you what. I heard Perry call into our friend George Blackard the other day, and I was like, man, Perry is a poet, just an absolute poet. But, Perry, apparently you got a chance to hear a little bit about what Stephen Miller has to say. I told our listeners earlier this week, Stephen Miller, the border policy advisor to President Donald J. Trump, when he was president, I mean, he went off on liberal Senator John Tester in a series of tweets posted on X, calling out Tester for voting against the Lake and Riley Act, calling out Tester for voting in support of secret charter flights shipping illegal aliens all across the country. And then Tester voted to allow men to invade girls' locker rooms. Anyway, Perry, good to hear from you.
Good morning, Aaron. Thank you for having Stephen Miller on your show today to shine the light of facts and truth on the swamp rat, John Tester, for all of Montana to hear. You know, cockroaches do tend to scatter when you turn the lights on, and Mr. Miller's strategy of person-to-person communication of Tester's disgusting enslavement to the money and agenda of the radical leftists will be his downfall. We all know that most of the biggest newspapers in Montana, and even some of the smaller ones, are dominated by the appropriated press liberal philosophy. We must all realize that these outfits are in the propaganda business and will always filter their output to fit the lefty agenda. But here is how we fight back. Contact the editor. Tell them you're going to cancel your subscription and why you're going to do it. Then call the subscription department and do it. This is the one thing you can do that they will understand and just might change their behavior. No, what do you think about it?
No, I think that's right. Hold the press accountable. Hold the press accountable for failing to do their jobs. That was part of what Stephen Miller had to say. He also said, hey, call five of your friends and tell five of your friends to call five of their friends, because the media is by and large going to cover for John Tester in these anti-Montana votes. I mean, you know, it's crazy. It's like, and by the way, hold me accountable too. That's why I love taking your phone calls. If you disagree with something I said, or if you think, well, wait, Aaron, there's another side of that story, call into the show. That's why we love taking your phone calls. And by the way, when we take your phone calls, everybody gets to hear it when you call in. But what Stephen Miller is saying, email politely. Email respectfully, call these newspaper publishers or these TV editors and say, hey, how come you guys haven't been reporting on the news? How come you haven't been covering all of these votes that John Tester just cast this past weekend? And it's because most of these so-called news outlets cover for John Tester instead of cover John Tester. I mean, that's why our show, I think, is so popular with folks all across Montana, because they're like, wait a minute, how come we aren't getting this news or information anywhere else except for through our local radio stations here? And so we're not seeing it on TV. We're not seeing it in the newspapers. By and large, there's some weekly newspapers, Yellowstone County News, et cetera, that do a good job. But why aren't we getting this news in the news? Well, hey, that's why we're here, to do our job for you on the radio. And by the way, local radio in Baltimore, Maryland, boy, did they do apparently a great job getting the word out, getting the breaking news information out to their listeners when it really mattered. Our friend Matt Desch with KJJR Radio in Kalispell sent me a RadioInc.com story about how, you know, local morning radio led the way after the bridge collapse there and getting out that important information. So, Matt, thanks for sharing that story. All right, next up on the phone lines, we've got Mark in Fort Benton. Mark, thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Well, good morning, Aaron, and glad to be on your show for just a quick minute, and enjoyed your interview with Steve Miller. Wow, what a enlightening type conversation you had with him. That was great. And I think my opinion and my suggestion would be for the Republican Party to run ads and flood the networks and all the media about what Steve Miller just pointed out, how Tester voted recently, and really, you know, overwhelm the other ads that Tester's been running and being supported by his party.
Yeah, of course, that takes money, and that takes campaign fundraising for state parties and for candidates to be able to get that message out. I know Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy and Republican Senate candidate Tim Sheehy has been hammering Tester on the open borders and inflation and so much more now as he's been hitting the campaign trail. And I think folks are starting to get the message. I think they're finally starting to get it that that Tester just pretends to be a moderate, but yet he's a radical leftist, because the latest polling shows Tim Sheehy, you know, within the margin of error, within striking distance against Tester. And that's even as Tester has had his dark money operatives spending $1 million a week bashing the Navy SEAL veteran.
Right. Well, I understand and agree, but I still think this recent development that Steve Miller brought up would be very good to have that on the air somewhere.
Yeah, especially
by either Sheehy or the party or whoever.
That's right. Especially because speaking of Tim Sheehy, he called out Tester over the girls sports issue too. He said, boys are boys, girls are girls. Sheehy gets it, but Tester wants Sheehy's in the girls locker room. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, Tim Sheehy's even kind of made a similar joke as he's been out on the campaign trail. All right, Mark, thanks for listening in Fort Benton. Great to hear from you. Next up, our good friend Mario in Glendive. Mario, always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Good morning. I have a question about this. I've been on drinking for 8 years, and that last boat is very great on open sea, but when they go through the channel, they used to have a tugboat on each side, on the port and the starboard side, with heavy rope, and they got the heavy ship to the channel without hitting anything. And I don't know why they did not have that. They didn't have that.
Oh, good question. I'll have to look back at my Kirk Ryder conversation to see. He talked a little bit about the shipment through the channel. I'll have to see if that particular angle was mentioned. Yeah, good question. He did describe the size of this type of cargo ship, and so I'll definitely share that before we run out of time because it's interesting.
Yeah, okay, thank you very much, Aaron. That's what I got for you.
Hey, thank you.
I've seen it done.
All right, well, okay, thank you, thanks. Mario. Always great to hear from our Cuban-American friend.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
All right.
Yeah, what's the line about Liberty? What's the line that all our Cuban-American friends use? Do you got it handy? I'll think of it.
About Liberty.
It's about...
Oh, okay, wait, I know. I know what it is. Give me Liberty or give me death.
That's what we can all agree on. Yeah,
right.
That's the English version. I like it. Mario, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Hey. Studio. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Patria e vita, patria e vita. That was the line I was thinking of. Although, give me liberty, give me death. That is the best. Patria e vita, homeland and life. That was in the 2021 Cuba freedom rallies. That was the line that I kept seeing on all the signs of the freedom lovers, the freedom loving Cuban Americans. And then, of course, everybody knows the Cuba Libre. It's not just a beverage. Cuba Libre actually means free Cuba, right? If I'm not mistaken, did a little quick search there. But Mario and Glendive, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Doug in Billings. I was just going to ask Travis, who's on line four? And then I was like, oh, man, I got to get to Doug in Billings. Doug, what's on your mind?
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I wonder if people have gotten the word that the Wall That Heals is coming to Montana this year.
Where's it coming and when's it coming?
It will be in Butte on August 29th to September 1st. Now, having said that, it will arrive in Butte on the 27th, and that's the purpose of my call. They would like as many people as possible to escort that wall through Butte to the point where it's going to be set up. They're going to have kind of a parade from Three Bears, Alaska, to Father Sheehan Park,
wow,
through Butte, to set that to set the wall up. And the person that's in charge of all of that says that he would like to have every motorcycle in the state on site for that parade. And by the way, four-wheelers, side-by-sides, cages, everybody's welcome.
You name it,
but,
yeah.
They will be staging at 8 o'clock at Three Bears, Alaska, and then kickstands up for the parade, for the escort to the Father Sheehan Park will be about 1300.
Yeah, and that's, of course, a few months from now, but that's why it's good you're getting the message out now so people can put it on their calendar and start preparing and start being willing to volunteer. Who do they get a hold of if they want to take part in that?
I think all they have to do is show up. Now, I can give you the name of the person that's organizing this, but I'll do that offline.
Perfect. Yeah, shoot me an email if you can, aaron@montanatalks.com. And, I'd love to get that message out that, hey, so folks can get that on their radar. You know, it's 5 months away, but, hey, people are planning out their summer vacations already, and that's something I know a lot of our patriotic listeners are going to want to take part in. So thanks for calling. Let's see. Okay, I'll try to get to another caller on the phone lines here before we run out of time, but I do want to share another soundbite. I was talking with Kirk Ryder, a Billings, Montana native who's got a career in the maritime industry, started at the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy back in the 80s, but he did some measurements, and so how big are these container ships? He says that this ship that struck the bridge in Maryland, it's not the biggest one out there. It's like a mid-size cargo ship. But yet, imagine if that thing was on the ground in Montana, how big would it be?
I did some measurements last night on a tool I have, and this vessel is 984 feet. It's not by any means a considerable length. I mean, the Titanic was 800 and something feet, but these vessels are basically large bathtubs that they put all these containers in. So they're massive in nature with their beam and their length. But when I placed the measurements on, Billings, Montana reference, if you were to put this ship on 27th Street, facing towards the airport and have the stern at Montana Avenue, basically docked right outside the Doubletree, the bow would go all the way up to the Yellowstone County Courthouse. And if this ship were like to take off and kind of go down the road there, as they pass by the courthouse, the captain and the pilot would be able to go out on the bridge wing and hand off a jar of Grey Poupon to people standing on the roof of the courthouse. So that's kind of the scale of what we're dealing with here. And you know, like I said, there's vessels that are twice the size of this would dwarf any of the buildings, even the First Interstate Tower there in Billings.
Yeah, so there you go. Anyway, fascinating numbers. Basically, again, if you were to go from Montana Avenue in Billings several blocks away to the Yellowstone County Courthouse, that's the length of this ship. And then about halfway up the 23 floors of the Doubletree Hotel, where our studios are at right now, is how tall it would go above water. Like he said, you could be on the roof of the Yellowstone County Courthouse and pass a bottle of Grey Poupon, a jar of Grey Poupon, to the captain of the ship. That's how tall this thing is. Full audio will be on our Montana Talks podcast. Actually, it's probably already there later today if you want to go listen to the full conversation. It was very interesting. Harry in Missoula, we got about a minute or so to go. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, good morning. Real quick, I hear people keep bragging about how we were energy independent under Trump, and yet the fact is that we are producing more oil and gas now than it's record. So that means more than ever. So how can we not be energy dependent now? I mean, it's a nice tagline, but it's, you know, we are making more gas, and this is not coming from just the media. This is coming from experts I've heard on several different shows. So I mean, it's
well, the rig count is what matters. The problem is our population continues to grow, and we continue to need more energy, not less. So it's the rig count that really matters. I mean, just increasing production from existing wells, that's natural, right? What we need is more exploration, more development.
Yeah, but we're still producing more oil now than ever. So, I mean, like Mark Twain says, get your facts right first. Then
okay, okay, it sounds like you're trying to cover for the Biden administration blocking off more production when we're using more and more of it. I mean, that's the whole point, is that we're using more electricity, we're using more oil, and yet they keep shutting off.